In this episode of the Beamable Game Dev Podcast, I sit down with Rob McCallum, who's an indie filmmaker, to talk about crowdfunding your indie game. Let's jump into the interview. Rob McCallum, how are you?
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Excited to be here. Excited to talk to you. I can't keep the smile off my face, my friend.
It's been a while. We've known each other a long time. We met through a podcast. I had you on a show years ago to talk about your film Nintendo Quest, and here we are.
6 years, man. We've known each other, and we've gone back and forth about a different things, not even about that movie that you so nicely name dropped. We've done a lot of different stuff, even stuff like this. It's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. So the focus of today's episode, you are like what I like to consider the kickstarting guru, the crowdfunding guru, if you will. And I want to talk about how that relates to indie devs and raising money for their projects. And so, but before we jump into it, I know you're a gamer. And so I got to know what you're playing right now.
Two big titles that I'm playing, and I'm always on the lookout for other stuff. So certainly send me recommendations, everybody out there that's listening and watching. Mini Motorways, huge fan of it on Apple Arcade. I never bought into the Apple Arcade thing, and I thought, oh, well, what's this about? I really need something on the go that I can just pull out of my pocket. And it's this road drawing game where you've got to get commuters from their house to their warehouse. And so people that live in the blue house have to go to the blue building. Sounds simple, right? You draw the road, and you only have so many tiles you can draw, and it refreshes every week. But then you got to get the red house to the red warehouse, and then the yellow and the green. And before you know it, you're in these crazy, massive, sprawling, spaghetti bowl-like roadways. You're like, nobody can get anywhere. There's so much traffic, and you got to erase it and redraw it and repurpose it and build like bridges and stuff. So if you love SimCity, you'll love it, and that's why I'm addicted. I'm also obsessed with TMNT Mutant Madness, and I like it because it's like collecting action figures and toys, but in the world of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And once you unlock your guys that you want, you can level them up, put them on your squad, play them through the story, and just keep kind of researching and engaging, flip and return. And they have got lots of season passes, lots of unlocks. It never ends. Every season is like 7 weeks. So when you pay like $20 for a season, you get a lot of time and a lot of extra bonuses for just a little bit of cash. So it's the first one out there that's really got me consistently wanting to keep up with it. So, and I don't know what that secret sauce is, but I'm addicted. I like it.
You're hooked. So let's talk a little bit about just a couple of your projects, right? Before we jump into this, you've been doing Kickstarters for at least 6 years, maybe longer.
Yeah, exclusively relying on Kickstarter, I like to say, or crowdfunding to some degree or another since Nintendo Quest. Nintendo Quest had two Kickstarters that were both successful, looking to fund different stages of the project, not just one and done, all or nothing, but production and then post-production and legal costs we were funding for. Some of the projects I've done have been all or nothing, where it's like, we don't get this seed money. We don't do anything. And thankfully we get it. Another part that's just been, hey, we want to do a disc release. We want to put our film on DVD. Yes, it'll be out there streaming, but hey, I know you're a fan and fans like to hold things. So let's get together, people, and let's raise a little bit of cash, get the cheddar in the bank, and get a Blu-ray out there.
And before we dive into the meat and potatoes, where could we find some of your work? What are some of the things you've done?
Okay. Well, most of the links, you can go to my website at robmczob.com. That is a moniker that our good friend, Mr. Glenn Stanway, came up with, Rob McZob. So robmczob.com has links to all my work, and I specialize in documentaries that focus on the pop cultural world, usually tied to a personal story. So we'll follow an individual who's undergoing something interesting that relates to the subject matter. You can see my work on Netflix, on Amazon Prime, on Apple TV, Vimeo, of course, kind of any kind of platform around the world, Sky, Super Channel in Canada. I've been very fortunate that the pop culture fan base likes what I do, likes how I do it, and keeps coming back to the table, especially when I announce a new Kickstarter.
And you've got things like the box art, which was started as a documentary, turned into like a multi-part series, right?
Yeah, so video game box art, the stories behind the covers, was initially a 90-minute feature-length film looking at all the iconic gaming covers of our time, but talking to the illustrators who were responsible for them, because most of us don't know who came up with the imagery for those boxes as we grew up. You know, nobody knows who painted the cover for Castlevania, maybe, or who did the cover for Blades of Steel or Mega Man 2. And so I thought, man, that's a shame that somebody who creates such an iconic image that gets burned in our head when we think of the game is kind of left out of the spotlight. So I kind of wanted to right that pop culture wrong and talk to these people, not only showcase who they are, but how they got their start and what other art they had done, and see the connection between all their artwork. And we were very successfully funded over $30,000, which is pretty great for an indie documentary. And then I just thought, you know, we've got like a lot of people on board this project. You know, at the time we had like 150 artists that were willing to be on board. And I said, how am I going to get 150 people to talk in a 90-minute window? It seems like a lot. So we retooled a bit and I turned it into a series that would feature two or three artists per episode. And we funded essentially 6 to 8 episodes, depending on where you watch. 6 is the standard release. And we get to basically sit down and spend some time with them. Because if the whole point is to get to know these people and shine the spotlight on them, you got to do that with more than just a couple comments per minute for a 90-minute runtime. So it was a really cool in-depth conversation with some of the pioneers of the industry. And along the way, you get to see how the industry transformed from its infancy of the Fairchild Channel F days in the 70s to kind of how the introduction of Photoshop and marketing and agencies come in the mid-90s and how that changes the industry and what the role of the artist becomes as a result.
I love it. I love all your work. It's always been it's such a joy to know when there's something new coming out or, you know, and we even got to meet in person as you guys were doing the theatrical release of Nintendo Quest. And it was quite the experience.
It's very cool when you get to meet somebody in person that you only met online. Like I said, 6 years ago, we met in person almost 6 years, not long after from when we're recording this, actually, to be honest, it was right around this time. It's awesome. You're very kind with your words about my work. Again, very fortunate and humble. Look at the smile on your face. I didn't send you a check, but I should.
Yeah, right. So speaking of checks, let's talk about crowdfunding. Before I hit the record button, you were kind of giving me some words of wisdom when it comes to crowdfunding and crowdfunding games in particular, especially mobile games with like iTunes and Google. Could you share with us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was fortunate enough to have a very, very small blink of an eye stint in the world of game development, specifically for a mobile developer that's local called Tiny Titan Studios. They have a very cool retro feel to a lot of the games they put out there. Fun, charming IP. If you like Stardew Valley, chances are you would love a lot of their content. And even though my time with them was quite brief, very eye-opening. And it was so cool to get to know that world a little bit more. And it really helped shape me as a filmmaker as well. But what I thought was fascinating was how Kickstarter was viewed by a kind of maybe unofficially through the grapevine. The word was that Kickstarter and crowdfunding was not a good tool to use for anybody in the mobile dev world, especially with a free-to-play game, because that could be seen as a way to circumvent revenue sharing with these major platforms. As you know, the Google Play Store and the Apple Marketplace, they take a chunk of the games, and they're very, very strong players in the mobile world, you know. And they don't like being cut out of something, so they don't want to see companies raising millions of dollars offering lots of free currency, free in-game currency or free weapon packs or something that nets the developer money that they feel they should be a part of. So this was always a tricky thing when we were exploring crowdfunding within that company. And then other companies have approached me afterwards and I've said the same thing to them. Like, you just be careful what you're risking, because there's no rules against it, but is it in their interest to promote your title if you've already kind of circumvented their rules once by releasing stuff without including your partner? And it's a tough thing. And I understand it too. If on the film side, a distributor said, hey, you've just raised $10 million and now we have no customers to sell your film to, we don't want to take it, do it yourself, I can see where they're coming from. So Kickstarter and circumventing the marketplace and what people can potentially make off your product, whether it's a movie or a video game in this case, is something to be very present-minded about. Be very in the moment about what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. And what you're trying to offer, and if it's truly going to benefit you now or later, or come back to get you.
Okay, so little word to the wise. We're still going to get into this, but there is, something to be aware of. Anyway, while you were with Tiny Titan, did it stop them from crowdfunding, or did they still take the plunge?
We tabled the discussion for the time it took to build a campaign, to mount a campaign with all the assets needed from all the different departments for the game that we were considering. It was just a lot of work. And then to dedicate the time and resources for once the campaign goes live became counterintuitive to what we were hoping to raise. So it was tabled. It wasn't ruled off, but it just didn't seem to make the most sense at the time. Now there was projects we were considering, you know, for a console based release or Steam releases, I guess you could say, versus strict mobile dev. But just the exploratory round was like, oh, this is what we found. It might not behoove us to do this. And then if that wasn't a factor, does the time sink and the effort sink, is it going to yield what we want for this? And it's always the question, how much time do you have to do this? Because running a crowdfunding campaign is a lot of work.
we've talked at length about this. And so
I've lost years running crowdfunding campaigns. You know, like the 30 days that the typical campaign runs cost me 30 years of my life. I'm actually 16 years old, folks. This is what I look like.
Right. Exactly. So let's say I'm prepping my game. I've got my idea. I've got some, you know, a decent prototype. And I'm like, I want to fund this thing. Mm-hmm. What are some of the first steps to jump it onto Kickstarter?
So you've already made the decision. You're going to Kickstarter. Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. Kickstarter it is.
Well, you've got to decide how you want your game to come across. Just because you have a playable demo or something to showcase in the way of a trailer, perhaps, you've got to figure out what all your ad copy is and all your related imagery so that somebody that finds that campaign or clicks on a link somewhere in social media, you have to find a way to envelop them in the entire world of your game, whether that's 8-bit retro tennis or whether that's, you know, Arctic survival, first-person shooter. You have to make sure that the themes and the messages and the vision of your game can now be translated to a platform and can work within the fields that that platform allows you to use. So this isn't like creating your own website. You've got certain fields and certain image restrictions and asset restrictions that you have to then cobble together onto this page-like experience that will hopefully convince somebody to get behind your crowdfunding initiative. You have to figure out what the pitch is for your game. Is it to get it made? Because, well, you've got a demo. Clearly, you don't need money. If you can make a demo, you can make a whole game, right? Is it just to get it released? Is it for something specific? Is it for something physical that isn't related to the game at all but ties into the game? Again, with my films, we'll do DVD and Blu-ray releases. Normally, streaming is the way right now. right? We watch all our entertainment on the go, click a button on demand. Broadcast is still part of it, but even within that, you don't necessarily, you're not guaranteed a DVD or Blu-ray release. So that is always a staple for me. What can you do for your game? You've got to really start thinking about how to make your crowdfunding opportunity an attractive option for your target market. And who is your target market? Who are you going after? All video gamers? There's a lot of different kind of gamers out there. What genres are you going after? What genre is your game? Is it blend? Is it blended? Is it a mashup between genres? Well, which ones are you going to target? How are you going to get the word out about this campaign? Are you going to target influencers? Or are you just going to do it yourself? I could sit here and talk questions for the next hour, Josh. And you know, you would just sit there politely listening and nodding your head. But I think you probably want some more answers than questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, like you said, you do have to ask those questions, and those are all important because they're going to dictate the way this plays out, right? So, let's say I have my third person, Arctic survival horror third person shooter with some RPG elements, and maybe it's a BR. I don't know. This
I'm in
a survival BR.
You know what? The pitch, I'm in. Here's my $20. I'm in.
Yeah, survival horror BR. Okay, so I've got all that down. I know I'm going to be going after like survival horror fans and BR fans, and I've got all the marketing material ready to go. The pitch is ready to go. The Kickstarter's put together. I hit go. Now I've got my 30 days. What does that 30 days look like?
Well, you just go back and you put your feet up on the sofa, watch a little TV, glance over at your laptop every now and then. Maybe you look at your phone and think, oh, look at that. There's a couple more bucks. Doing pretty good today.
Well, I don't think you age yourself in those 30 days by sitting back and watching TV.
No, the reality is, ideally, you've put in about 6 months of work before you even hit that go button on Kickstarter, before your campaign begins. Hopefully, you've put in 6 months of work. Yep, it takes that much time. And that's because sometimes you need time to let things just simmer and cook. It's even with the film stuff that I've done, I thought that I knew my film and I thought that I knew how to market it. And then I start putting stuff on the page and then I'll go back after a day or so and read it and go, this isn't getting at the core that I want, or I can share like private links with people and they can look at it and they say, this isn't the product that you pitched me. What you pitched me and what resonated with me was something different. So you've got to do 6 months of work before you even hit the go button, because you have to figure out what you're going to do when those 30 days begin. I like to break it down into 4 weeks. So 28 days, I guess, plus a few extra, depending on how the calendar sits that month. And what are you going to attack week one, week two, week three, week four? When I mean attack, I mean what points you're going to drive home. What are those messages you're going to put out there within those broad themes? And then within that week, every day, what are the subtopics that you're going to attack? So if you're talking about week one, hey, we're live, which is the common one, and the last week being, hey, it's about to end. What are those mini topics that you can say like, hey, we're live, we're a brand new Arctic survival VR game. You know, and then really just drive home the genre. And then maybe you're driving home how new and stuff the music is. But you will hopefully have done some press outreach. You'll hopefully have found a way to get a playable demo into people's hands, and not just all on day one, but before day one, so that when you get reactions and reviews, you can filter them throughout the 30 days to say like, hey, here's a new review, because updates are really strong and powerful. And if you get them all on day one, not only will someone probably miss, 150 reviews or whatever of your game, they're only going to watch one or two. But if you kind of sprinkle them throughout, it might be a different take on them and it might be something more interesting. It's the fight for eyeballs, like anything else in advertising. And with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, tightening up those algorithms and how stuff gets out there, making it a little bit more pay to play than it used to be, you used to talk to Aunt Mary all the time on Facebook, and now you never see her gardening posts anymore. So you might have to do some, outreach. You might have to pick up the actual phone and use it to call somebody. if you can imagine that crazy concept, and just let them know about your game.
I can't. Let's talk about, let's break this down a little bit, because, you know, you did say like press, like some press outreach. How and who are you reaching out to?
Well, who do you follow for your games? Who has covered games like yours before? YouTubers are out there that you really like and appreciate that also align with your game? And how can you entice them to take a look at what you've got? What mainstream media makes sense? And this all relates back to, why is your game so damn cool? And why is it, you know, worthy of asking people for money? What is that headline? You know, if you've got all your marketing material together and you've got your pitch and you can build a Kickstarter campaign, then you know why your game is headline worthy. What truly makes it set out, set itself apart from other games out there, specifically in the genre, I would hope at the very least, why your Arctic survival third person VR game with some RPG adventure elements is unique. But also within video games itself, why is that like such a cool thing that somebody who might like puzzles, it wants to check this game out? How does it defy norm, and what is like that water cooler kind of conversation moment? You mentioned Nintendo Quest, and our big thing was, yeah, it's a documentary on Nintendo and why people still love it, you know, 30 years later at the time. But what the water cooler question was the crux of our film idea. Can this guy who loves Nintendo still, the original NES system, can he go in 30 days and collect every single original NES game without making any online purchases? And people thought, well, how would you do that? How could you do that? So people start talking about it without even realizing that they're buying into the whole crux of it. So how can you get people to talk about your game and salivate for it? The same way when you see a movie trailer or a game trailer. E3 is so cool, right? Because you get to see all the game trailer stuff that comes out. You're like, oh, I can't wait to see what that game is like. What's that experience? How do you communicate that play experience from visual media? And when you figure out the best way to pitch that game, that's when you can start really opening up opportunities. Make a press release. Send that to different people. Talk to bloggers. Be your own blogger, be your own podcaster, talk about it, start, you know, a 30-day podcast where you do an hour every day or a half hour, whatever it is, talking about different aspects of your game, and then get that trending, get that all over the place, share it with other people, talk to other game devs about your game, share it with them, you know, and not only can you leverage their star power from what they do in their community by having them on your show, you get to hear their thoughts and solicit their advice about your game. It's a win-win.
When that content that you're creating with that podcast can be used not only to go out and become a marketing material for you, but it can also be used as your updates on your for Kickstarter, right? Which then, absolutely, in turn, like, as I was thinking about this, I wrote a post about this not too long ago on bmobile.com, and the way I see it is you can almost kind of leverage something like a podcast where you're like, hey, I'm going to be sharing what we're talking about with all of my current backers. So it's going to be a chance for more eyes to get on whatever it is that you're also working on, right? And to introduce more people to your brand. And so, but this all takes work. This is
not. It all takes work. And it's interesting because people, and I set this up specifically, and you, I think you've already hit it on the head. And you may not, you probably realize this. People think, oh, I'm going to do a project. Now I'm going to do a podcast to help promote it. Well, imagine, dear ladies and gentlemen out there listening in the world, imagine if the project wasn't the game, but the project was the podcast and the thing that you're mentioning every now and then are all these other projects that you're doing. So that the driving factor and the spine of who you are is the podcast, that repeatable user experience. There's a game dev term for you. What if your podcast was that digestible thing that people depend on weekly to see who you are and hear your thoughts? And if they want an extension of you, another thing to satiate their appetite, they can check out your game. The perfect example is someone like Kevin Smith. He has several podcasts and he talks about all his projects that have a short lifespan by comparison, but we all get excited for those projects. That could be you.
So it's getting the brand building is taking place. Maybe, I mean, you mentioned 6 months, but I mean, this could be It could be a year ahead of time.
The more time you've got, the better. If you're doing the podcast already, then you can start seeding in the early stuff of these various projects, these satellites that come into your orbit, you know, for 3 to 5 years of your life, and then, you know, continue around. But then there's other new things that happen. Very much a brand building thing if you can have the foresight to do that. And if not, it's like, hey, I just want to do a limited run podcast to help support the scheme while I have a campaign. That's totally cool too. People are going to eat that up, especially if your game is as cool as it should be, if it deserves a Kickstarter.
Well, and you had your Nintendo Quest podcast, right? Going well after the film, which then helped fund more of the behind the scenes, you know, the trip, the tour, if you will. Right. And did it also then bleed over into box art?
Very much so. So after Nintendo Quest was filmed, that's when we started our podcast, because we wanted a way to keep the conversation alive while I was working on the film and we were selling it. And what ended up happening was we got a big enough following that we thought, well, why not do like a theatrical tour? Not just like in all theaters all at the same time, but let's go city to city and take the film around. And then so we got excited about podcasting about that and then filming that whole experience and then talking about that experience after it was done. And then that naturally led into the overlap with video game box art and other projects that I was doing at the time. And it was just like one thing kept feeding the other. And the podcast was the constant in the background for everybody. So, you know, if you were a gamer for those 6 or 7 years that we were doing a lot of the gamer related stuff, it was like, oh, cool, I can go from this to this to this. And you heard different personalities, different guests, you know, some that are doing some really cool stuff in the world of gaming right now.
Yeah, it was always a good time to fire that show up and be able to hear what was going on in the lives of Rob, Jay, and Glenn. So I loved it. How about that game dev that says I'm too busy, I'm too introverted. I know personally, I spoke with the dev at E3 one time, and I was like, basically telling them, hey, start documenting your journey online right now. Start building that brand right now, whether it be through Instagram Live at the time, that was kind of the new hotness or whatever that case may be. Is Kickstarter for the place? Is it a place for people like that? Or do you just have to tell them you got to get out of your shell? And I know that game making is the passion, but to kickstart it, you're going to have to transition a little bit.
I think it's both. I think Kickstarter isn't about the game or project. I mean, it certainly is there. This is just like what we're saying about the podcast, my friend. Everybody is backing something on Kickstarter because, of course, they feel they can get something and usually get something at a good deal compared to a price they might have to pay later or the version they might get later. But ultimately, a big part of that is who they're investing in. And when something goes wrong on Kickstarter or crowdfunding, it's always, oh, that game was horrible. It's never the project. It's always the people that run the campaign that they target, because that personal quotient is such a big part of the buying power. So if you're inverted, if you're shy, be who you are. Don't apologize for that. Just be you and do what you can do, because guess what? There are other inverted, shy people out there. That's you. That can be your brand. At the same time, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have the time for that because you'd rather spend it doing gaming stuff, then find someone who you work with that can do that, who can be the face and the voice of the product and who truly gets what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with that either. But I think the best way to do it is to be the voice of your creation. And you're going to have to get out there and pitch it to people in person anyways. You'll get better at it. Like you said, get out of your shell a little bit. People love everybody. We love each other, and we don't have to be fake. We can just be who we are. And the more we are who we truly are, our one true self, the better we always are with what we're trying to achieve and go after. So be yourself. You're an introverted, shy game dev. You have an idea for a game. Pick up that cell phone and just start recording yourself, talking right to the screen. Be honest, brainstorm like crazy, right to the screen. That's one post for you.
There you go. How much do these campaigns usually cost, right? Because I know there's people are going to be going into this thinking, okay, I'm going to be using Kickstarter to make money. But you touched on something earlier where you were like, hey, the algorithms and stuff aren't so friendly now unless you open up your wallet. So I assume you recommend jumping into a Kickstarter campaign with a little bit of an ad campaign budget, right? So you could start like promoting some posts on Facebook and Instagram and the such.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate evil. It is the quickest and simplest way to get eyeballs, though. Like, for every dollar you put in, you can target the people that you want to see it. And frankly, with so many other things that are difficult about a Kickstarter campaign, it's nice to have one simple solution. It's costly, but it's simple. You know, you want it to be cheap or you want it to be easy. It's always the toss up. I think for a Kickstarter campaign, you've got to set aside thousands of dollars sometimes, depending on what you're trying to do. If you want a very professional looking video that features yourself, you're going to have to hire a production crew to make you look nice and pretty, because that video should be a reflection of the experience and the professionalism of the product, service, or game that you're offering. If it's, you know, handheld and you're on like a selfie stick and it's too bright because you're filming outside in the sun, people unconsciously will associate that with the product you're asking them to back. That's not a good thing. So you want to make sure you appear really, really nice, and you want to have nice graphics and art assets throughout your whole page. Maybe you're not an artist, but you're a great programmer. Well, you're gonna have to hire somebody to help do that, because again, you have to create that all enveloping experience when you go to a Kickstarter page or Indiegogo or wherever, so that people say, wow, this is a cool experience. This really stands out. I had a great time being here. I want to support this. You have to convince people. And the only way to convince people to spend money is to spend money yourself. It's the other thing. When you show that you've got skin in the game and that you've already spent lots of money, even on the campaign or the actual project, people are like, hey, look, he's not just trying to get money from me because, you know, he can do it, but he's just choosing not to. You know, he's sticking his neck on the line. He's spending a lot of money. Even this campaign's costing a lot of money. And it's evident when you look at it that the money has been spent to make this look awesome. So you gotta, I would suggest, you know, depending on the scale and what you're trying to do specifically, certainly setting aside a few thousands of dollars for the whole campaign. And at least a good portion of that should be for advertising. I know campaigns that have spent like $10,000 on just social media ads to really drive traffic towards their game. And it works. You can see the stats and the click-through rates and everything.
With your experience, what kind of updates do the best as you're going through a campaign, a 30-day campaign?
Exciting ones, new ones, things that take the campaign in new directions. So when you can have mini milestone markers that are basically like achievements that you can unlock, that gets exciting, because then people feel like they're really along for the journey, because now you've created a narrative for your success. You know, it's like the Wizard of Oz, right? Follow the yellow brick road and look at all the different things and people that you meet along the way. So what is that narrative through that 30-day journey? I already talked about breaking it down into maybe like four different weeks with four different themes. Having new unexpected things happen is always the coolest thing, because your backers will increase over the 30-day time span. So you'll have more and more reactions as you go, of course. But it's like, oh my God, this major publisher is interested, or they just checked out the game review, or they just checked the game and here's their review of it. It's like, it's really exciting when somebody established will support and shine a little bit of light on what you're doing. When it's like, oh my God, I'm taking my 90-minute documentary on video game box art illustrators and now I'm making it a 6-part television series. That's exciting for people, because it takes it in a new direction while still keeping the core idea in place, but expanding it. And again, benefiting everybody that has chosen to get in on the ground floor now, because it'll behoove them more than the people who are waiting down the road for it to come around. So anything that's exciting, anything that adds legitimacy to what you're trying to do from the outside world of known entities, people, places, or companies, is always a big thing. Even if it's a breakthrough where, like, you know what, I've decided to add another level, this isn't going to change anything, or I'm reworking that, or here's some art assets that I haven't shared yet, just been waiting, you know, to get to a certain level to, you know, share some screenshots, or, you know what, I've decided to make, you know, level one playable for everyone. Here's the link. Check it out now. So it's just, there's lots of ways that things can be exciting. It's a living, breathing organism. And allow people to cherish it like a Tamagotchi with you. Let everybody feed this thing together and watch it take on a life of its own.
As you've done this through the years, and you've seen multiple campaigns, you've seen some people stick with you from the first to your current projects. How do you go about letting people know that they are a part of this story, not just sitting back, putting, you know, like, it's not just about their dollars, right? It's not about them opening their wallets, but it's about them being a part of what it is that you're doing.
It's only about the dollars, Josh. I don't care who you are or where you're from. I just want that cheddar.
You just want the check. Okay, fair enough.
Give me the check. Give me that check. That's all I want. That's why I make art for the money. That's right? Why I
make art.
Honestly, It's how you act. It really comes down to how you act. I like interacting with people. I'm a very personable individual. I like talking to people. And when people send me messages, I send them all back a response. I reach out to people. I, you know, forge, you know, friendships with these people as a result. And some people may go from one campaign to another that I create because they like the project, but ultimately, I think it's because they like who I am and how I do things. I'm very hands-on. I don't like hiring other people to do stuff. I'm very transparent. If I have a hiccup or a snafu, I say that. And I say, like, this is the deal. And people understand and they share their, you know, issues that they've had with me. And it just becomes a community, you know, like a brand, but we're doing this together. And there's nothing better than when you fulfill a campaign and send your rewards and you get that message from somebody who says, oh my God, it just showed up in the mail today. It's better than I thought. I can't believe I'm holding this in my hand. I'm stopping all my other plans because it arrived in the mail today and I'm watching it tonight or I'm reviewing it on my YouTube channel. Thank you so much. And it's like, don't thank me, thank you. I'm just glad it got to you and now enjoy it. Enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, and that, I mean, that all happens because of the storytelling during the campaign, because of the updates, because of the podcast, because of the content that is going out that, you know, that it, I mean, like you said, it shows that you, this is a passion project, right? That's why you're putting it out there because you want to fund your passion. And that's the same, like we want to see people's games funded. We want to see people's dreams funded, right? That's ultimately the goal here. And
this can happen with companies too, right? Like we're seeing, you know, folks like Kevin Smith, you know, who have a podcast to talk about all their different shows that happen, but of course what's going on in their daily life as well, because the podcast is a very personal, intimate kind of product at some point. Companies can do this too. Here's what we're doing at the company. It might change in 3 weeks, but having that level of transparency for a company that is putting out different kinds of games is really interesting. So imagine you had a podcast and you had regular chats with people from different dev teams talking about some of the struggles that they're going through. And now you have two different teams talking about struggles. And guess what? They might even have a solution for one another. And that can happen on a podcast. And anybody that's listening is hearing this brainstorming session. And now they might have only wanted to play the one game, but now they've heard about this other game and the solution is cross-pollinated. You just get wrapped up in the whole thing behind the scenes. And my favorite example of this, that is, it's a TV show. Okay. Are you familiar with Entourage on HBO?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Entourage is, for everybody that doesn't know, basically follows a movie star who rises through the ranks and brings like his childhood friends along for the ride with him. But the show isn't about the movies he makes. It's about the moments between the movies he makes. So every season is like 6 to 8 episodes that starts after he finishes a movie and his push and his drive to get to the next one with a whole bunch of obstacles along the way. And isn't that really like a podcast Josh. Yep. We're talking about the process of how we get from A to B and all the things that come up, and we're excited about these things that happen in our lives. But then, you know, we're circling the next thing that's happening, still keeping the other one relevant in our lives. And I just thought it was an interesting thing that nobody seemed to pick up on, that it's about the moments in between the moments that people talk about. That's the stuff. That's the real hook. That's the glue.
You are absolutely right. I mean, that's hitting the nail on the head right there, because it was the opportunity for me to feel like I got to know you and Jay through listening to you guys, that then made me, you know, throw some money to help support what you're doing, but then also jump in my car and drive 4 hours to be able to sit in a theater, you know, and watch the film. But then it was all that behind the scenes of like, I felt like I was part of it. And that, I think, is the ultimate goal to a successful Kickstarter, is that your supporters, not only are they going to get a killer product, right, but that they feel like they are part of and can get behind what it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. It's that engagement, and not just for financial purposes, for a 30-day window for a project that's going to probably take a couple of years or whatever the life cycle is, because hopefully they're not investing in the project. They're investing in you or the company, and they want to be along for the ride. And, you know, here's my $30 or whatever it is. Maybe it's $1,000. Maybe it's a different really cool perk that's only available one time only. Maybe it's an intern for a day at the company just to see what it's like. You know, but they'll take that experience that they have with that tier, that reward tier they've selected. And that's their first building block on a journey with you and your brand and everything that you're doing. And so that's the value of Kickstarter. Why should people do it? Why should companies consider it? Yeah, you might get your game funded, but it's an engagement machine to really showcase who you are. It's that big mirror that you get to hold up, but other people get to see that reflection too. And that's invaluable.
Rob, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I really, really do appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's fun.
Love it. All right. You take it easy now.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Beamable Game Dev Podcast. If you're an indie dev and you'd like to talk about your game, jump into our Discord, beamable.com/Discord. If you'd like to learn more about Beamable, or even try it with the game you're developing in Unity, head on over to beamable.com.